Hello, this is Miss Dell with the Decatur Herald and Review on Monday, January 26, 2026. We will begin today's reading on the front page with an article headlined "Snow Builds Up Amid Deep Freeze." Decatur. With the global warming phenomenon seemingly on vacation this weekend, central Illinois plunged into a nightmare of snow-jammed roads and meat locker temperatures. Snowfall totals for less than a month into 2026, as reported by the National Weather Service office in Lincoln, stood at almost 25 inches as more new snow continued to blitz the region on Sunday. Meteorologist Ben Dubelbeis said that close to 25-inch total was already 14.7 inches ahead of normal so far for this year. Oblong, in Crawford County, was leading the regional totals from the latest storm with 14.2 inches. Decatur reported 6 inches as more arrived on Sunday, while Mattoon's early Sunday tally stood at 4 inches and rising. Police said drivers are generally following guidance to stay off the roads unless absolutely necessary. Captain Joe Mannix with the Macon County Sheriff's Office, speaking Sunday, said plows were out and working county roads, but warned rising wind speeds are likely to make drifting snow a problem. "It's going to be a long 24 hours," he added. Dubelbeis said snowfall in central Illinois was tapering off west to east throughout Sunday afternoon and would be out of the state altogether around 6 p.m. Sunday. "But the other thing to be mindful of, especially on Sunday, is we've got to get some gusty winds out of the north," he said. "And so even as the snow ends, we're still going to see some blowing and drifting. So roads may continue to be snow-covered, especially the east-west-oriented roads, with the winds out of the north. The picture looks better for the rest of the week in terms of more snow arriving, although forecasters are watching a weather system Wednesday, which so far threatens with a 20% chance of snow. But the real focus as we go through the rest of the week is going to be the cold temperatures," Dubelbeis said. "Our low temperatures are going to be down in the single digits, if not below zero, and we're going to see wind chills each night, probably in the range of 10 to 20 degrees below zero. And there might be a couple of mornings a tad colder than that. We're actually forecasting wind chills of 20 to 30 degrees below." Still on the front page, our next article, "Tactics Unease Some in GOP." Washington. A handful of Republicans expressed growing concern Sunday about the tactics that the federal immigration officials are using in Minnesota after a U.S. Border Patrol agent fatally shot a man in Minneapolis. Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt said the killing Saturday of Alex Peretti, a 37-year-old intensive care unit nurse who protested President Donald Trump's immigration crackdown, was a real tragedy. Peretti was a U.S. citizen born in Illinois. "I think the death of Americans, what we're seeing on TV, it's causing deep concerns over federal tactics and accountability," Stitz told CNN's State of the Union. "Americans don't like what they're seeing right now." When asked if he thought the president should pull immigration agents from Minnesota, Stitz said Trump has to answer that question. "He's getting bad advice right now," Stitz said. "The governor and the Republican president need to tell the American people that the solution and endgame are, and that there need to be solutions instead of politicizing the situation. Right now, tempers are just going crazy, and we need to calm this down," Stitt said. Other Republicans, including Senators Tom Tillis of North Carolina and Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, also conveyed unease. In a social media post, Cassidy called the shooting incredibly disturbing and that the credibility of ICE and DHS are at stake. Tillis urged a thorough and impartial investigation. Any administration official who rushes to judgment and tries to shut down an investigation before it begins are doing an incredible disservice to the nation and to President Trump's legacy, Tillis said in a post. Administration officials were firm in their defense of the hardline immigration tactics. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said, "It's a tragedy when someone dies," but he blamed Democratic leaders in Minnesota for fomenting chaos. "There are a lot of paid agitators who are ginning things up, and the governor has not done a good job of tamping this down," Bessent said on ABC's This Week. Meanwhile, Democrats demanded federal immigration officers leave Minnesota after Saturday's fatal shooting. Federal officials say agents fired defensively Saturday morning when Peretti stepped into a confrontation between an immigration officer and a woman on the street. Officials say Peretti was armed, but no bystander videos appear to show him holding a weapon. The Minneapolis police chief said Peretti had a permit to carry a gun. Peretti's family said they were heartbroken but also very angry at authorities, saying in a statement that Peretti, a kind-hearted soul who wanted to make a difference in the world. A federal judge already issued an order blocking the Trump administration from destroying or altering evidence related to the shooting after the state and county officials sued. Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison said in the lawsuit filed Saturday is meant to preserve evidence collected by federal officials that state authorities have not yet been able to inspect. A court hearing is scheduled for Monday in federal court in St. Paul. A full, impartial, and transparent investigation into his fatal shooting at the hands of DHS agents is non-negotiable, Ellison said in a statement. Spokespersons for the Justice Department and the Department of Homeland Security, which are named in the lawsuit, did not immediately respond to an email seeking comment Sunday. Another federal judge previously ruled that officers participating in the federal immigration enforcement surge in Minnesota cannot detain or tear gas peaceful protesters who are not obstructing authorities, though an appeals court temporarily suspended the ruling days before Saturday's shooting. The Minnesota National Guard was assisting local police at the direction of Governor Tim Walz, officials said, with troops sent to both the shooting site and a federal building where officers have squared off daily with demonstrators. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem said during a news conference that Peretti showed up to impede a law enforcement operation. She questioned why he was armed, but did not offer details about whether Peretti drew the weapon or brandished it at officers. But gun rights groups noted it's legal to carry firearms during protests. Every peaceable Minnesotan has the right to keep and bear arms, including while attending protests, acting as observers, or exercising their First Amendment rights, the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus said in a statement. These rights do not disappear when someone is lawfully armed. The president weighed in on social media by lashing out at Walz and the Minneapolis mayor. He shared images of the gun that immigration officials said was recovered and said, "What is that all about? Where are the local police? Why aren't they allowed to protect ICE officers?" Trump said the Democratic governor and mayor are inciting insurrection with their pompous, dangerous, and arrogant rhetoric. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York was among several Democratic lawmakers demanding that federal immigration authorities leave Minnesota. She also urged Democrats to refuse to vote to fund U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, saying via social media, "We have a responsibility to protect Americans from tyranny." Senate Democrat leader Chuck Schumer later said that Democrats will not vote for a spending package that includes money for DHS, which oversees ICE. Schumer's statement increases the possibility that the government could partially shut down January 30th when funding runs out. Peretti was shot just over a mile from where an ICE officer killed 37-year-old Renee Good on January 7, sparking widespread protest. Peretti's family was furious at federal officials' description of the shooting. The sickening lies told about our son by the administration are reprehensible and disgusting. Alex is clearly not holding a gun when attacked by Trump's murdering and cowardly ICE thugs. He has his phone in his right hand, and his empty left hand is raised above his head while trying to protect the women ICE just pushed down, all while being pepper sprayed, the family statement said. Please get the truth out about our son. He was a good man. Demonstrations broke out in several cities across the country, including New York, Washington, and Los Angeles. In Minneapolis, protesters converged at the scene of the shooting despite dangerously cold weather with temperatures around -6 degrees Fahrenheit. An angry crowd gathered after the shooting and screamed profanities at federal officers, calling them cowards and telling them to go home. Protesters dragged garbage bins from alleyways to block streets, and people chanted, ICE out now, and observing ICE is not a crime. As darkness fell, hundreds of people mourned quietly by a growing memorial at the site of the shooting. A donut shop and a clothing store nearby stayed open, offering protesters a warm place as well as water, coffee, and snacks. Caleb Spike said he came from a nearby suburb to show his support and his frustration. It feels like every day something crazier happens, he said. What's happening to our community is wrong, it's sickening, it's disgusting. And now another article from the front page. Justices charge wind power transmission line forward. Springfield. Developers of a proposed massive transmission line that would bring wind-generated electricity from western Kansas to Illinois and other Midwest states cleared a legal hurdle Friday when the Illinois Supreme Court rejected a challenge to their state permit. In a 6-0 ruling, the court said Grain Belt Express, LLC, also known as GBX, had met its duty under the state's 2021 Climate and Equitable Jobs Act to show it could finance the project without significant adverse financial consequences for the utility or its customers. The court made that ruling despite a decision by the Trump administration last summer to cancel a $4.9 billion federal loan guarantee that had previously been approved by the Biden administration to finance the first phase of construction of the power line across Kansas and Missouri. That loan would have been just part of a complex financing package that also includes private funding from multiple sources. Friday's decision reverses a 2024 ruling by the 5th District Court of Appeals, which said the Illinois Commerce Commission erred when it originally granted a permit known as a Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity to GBX. Proof of GBX's current and present financial capability was not a condition precedent to the issue of the CPCN, the court said in an opinion written by Justice Mary K. O'Brien. Instead, evidence of the industry's method of financing the construction of large-scale energy projects, along with unrefuted evidence that such projects do not generate revenue until regulatory permits are issued and customer contracts are executed, supports the ICC's decision to issue a CPCN to GBX. The project, which has been in the planning stages for years, calls for an 800-mile high-voltage direct line that would stretch from western Kansas across Missouri and through now 9 counties in Illinois, ending in Indiana, where it would connect to the MISO and PJM regional power grids. The Illinois counties from west to east are Pike, Scott, Greene, Macoupin, Montgomery, Christian, Shelby, Cumberland, and Clark. In 2018, the Supreme Court overturned an ICC decision to grant a permit to build and operate the Illinois portion of the project, saying the company did not meet what was then the state's definition of a public utility. 3 years later, state lawmakers addressed it address that issue with passage of the Climate and Equitable Jobs Act, or CEJA, a far-reaching plan to incentivize development of renewable energy in Illinois with the goal of transitioning the state to 100% carbon-free electricity by 2045. That act contained a provision specifically designed for Grain Belt Express that allowed ICC to issue permits to a qualifying direct current applicant, which the law defines in a way that specifically describes GBX and its projected project. After the passage of the bill, GBX reapplied for the permit, which the ICC approved in March of 2023. Illinois Farm Bureau then teamed up with several landowners and opponents of the project to challenge the permit on several grounds, including a provision of the state's Public Utilities Act that requires applicants to demonstrate they are capable of financing the proposed construction without adversely affecting the utility or its customers. They also challenged the provision of CEJA that was specifically designed to facilitate the project, arguing it violated the Illinois Constitution's Equal Protection and Separation of Powers clauses, as well as its limits on special legislation. Friday's ruling addressed only the challenge to the statutory financing requirements. It remanded the remaining challenges back to the 5th District Court of Appeals for further consideration. A GBX spokesperson said after the ruling that the company was pleased with the decision and it plans to move forward as a privately financed project. Capital News Illinois is a nonprofit, nonpartisan news service that distributes state government coverage to hundreds of news outlets statewide. It is funded primarily by the Illinois Press Foundation and the Robert R. McCormick Foundation. Our next article raises doubts that ICE taking worst. This is Portland, Maine. Immigration and Customs Enforcement highlighted the detention of people whom it called some of Maine's most dangerous criminals during operations last week, but court records paint a more complicated picture. Federal officials said more than 100 people were detained statewide in what ICE dubbed Operation Catch of the Day, a reference to the fishing industry. ICE said it sought to arrest the worst of the worst, including child abusers and hostage takers. Court records show some were violent felons, but other detainees who had unresolved immigration proceedings but were never convicted of a crime were also arrested. Immigration authorities and local officials say similar concerns surfaced in other cities where ICE conducted enforcement surges and many of those targeted lacked criminal records. One case highlighted by ICE that involves serious felony offenses and criminal convictions is that of a Sudan native, Dominic Ali. ICE said Ali was convicted of false imprisonment, aggravated assault, assault obstructing justice, and violating a protective order. Court records show Ali was convicted in 2004 of violating a protective order and in 2008 of second-degree assault, false imprisonment, and obstructing the reporting of a crime. In the latter case, prosecutors said he threw his girlfriend to the floor of her New Hampshire apartment, kicked her, and broke her collarbone. His conduct amounted to nothing less than torture, Judge James Berry said in 2009 before sentencing Ali to 5 to 10 years in prison. Ali later was paroled to ICE custody, and in 2013 an immigration judge ordered his removal. No further information was available from the Executive Office for Immigration Review, and it remains unclear what happened to that order. Other cases were more nuanced, like that of Elmara Curry, an Angola native, whom ICE highlighted in its public promotion of the operation, saying she was arrested previously for endangering the welfare of a child. Maine court records show someone with that name was charged in 2023 with violating a law related to learner's permits for new drivers, a case that later was dismissed. Correa filed a petition Wednesday challenging her detention, and a judge issued a temporary emergency order barring authorities from transferring her from Massachusetts, where she is being held. Her attorney said she entered the United States legally on a student visa about 8 years ago and was never subject to expedited removal proceedings. Was she found not guilty, or are we just going to be satisfied that she was arrested, Portland Mayor Mark Dion said during a news conference in which he raised concerns that ICE failed to distinguish between arrests and convictions or explain whether sentences were served. Dion also pointed to another person named in the release, Danny Lopez Cortez, whom ICE said is a criminal illegal alien from Guatemala who was convicted of operating under the influence. ICE highlighted Lopez Cortez's case among a small group of examples it said reflected the types of arrests made during the operation. Dion questioned whether an operating under the influence conviction, a serious offense, but one commonly seen in Maine, should rise to the level of ICE's worst of the worst public narrative. Boston immigration attorney Caitlin Burgess said her office filed habeas petitions Thursday on behalf of four clients who were detained in Maine and transferred to Massachusetts. The most serious charge any of them faced was driving without a license, Burgess said, and all had pending immigration court cases or applications. Habeas petitions are often the only tool available to stop rapid transfers that sever access to counsel and disrupt pending immigration proceedings, she said. Attorney Samantha McHugh said she filed five habeas petitions on behalf of Maine detainees Thursday and expected to file three more soon. None of these individuals have any criminal record, said McHugh, who represents eight detainees. They were simply at work, eating lunch, when unmarked vehicles arrived and immigration agents trespassed on private property to detain them. Federal court records show that immigration cases involving criminal convictions can remain unresolved or be revisited years later. Another whose mugshot was included in materials on the worst of the worst of those detained in May is Ambessa Burhi. Burhi was convicted of cocaine possession and assaulting a police officer in 1996 and cocaine possession in 2003. In 2006, a federal appeals court in Boston vacated a removal order for him and sent the case back to the Board of Immigration Appeals for further consideration. According to the ruling, Burhi was born in Ethiopia and later taken to Sudan by his adoptive parents. The family was admitted to the U.S. as refugees in 1987 when he was adopted about nine. ICE said the operation targets about 1,400 immigrants in the state of about 1.4 million residents, about 4% of whom are foreign-born. Our next article, government funding, Dems oppose DHS bill. Senators vow to hold up money in wake of fatal shooting in Minnesota. Washington. Democratic senators are vowing to oppose a funding bill for the Department of Homeland Security following the shooting death of a 37-year-old Minnesota man, a stand that increases the prospect of a partial government shutdown by the end of the week. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer, in a social media post Saturday night, hours after the shooting, said that what is happening in Minnesota is appalling, and that Democrats will not provide the votes to proceed to the appropriations bill if the DHS funding bill is included. Six of the 12 annual spending bills for the current budget year have been signed into law by President Donald Trump. Six more are awaiting action in the Senate. If senators fail to act by midnight Friday, funding for agencies covered under those six bills will lapse. Republicans will need some Democratic support to pass the remaining spending bills in time to avoid a partial shutdown. That support was already in question after Renee Good, a mother of three, was shot and killed earlier this month by an Immigration and Customs Enforcement agent in Minneapolis. But the fatal shooting Saturday of Alex Peretti, an intensive care unit nurse, quickly prompted Democrats to take a more forceful stand. Democrats sought common sense reforms in the Department of Homeland Security spending bill, but because of Republicans' refusal to stand up to President Trump, the DHS bill is woefully inadequate to rein in the abuses of ICE, said Schumer, Democratic of New York. I will vote no. Washington Senator Patty Murray, the top Democrat on the Senate Appropriations Committee and key negotiator on the funding package, had been pushing her colleagues to vote for the Homeland Security bill, arguing that Democrats had successfully fought off major increases to the ICE budget. But in the wake of the shooting, Murray said Sunday on X that I will not support the DHS bill as it stands. Federal agents cannot murder people in broad daylight and face zero consequences, Murray wrote. Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, said Democrats should reconsider their threat to not support DHS funding and work with him to end the mess created by sanctuary city policies. Now is not the time to defund one of our major national security priorities, border protection, Graham said on X. The growing backlash from Democrats puts Republican leaders in the Senate in a difficult position. Much of the government, including the Department of Defense, continues to operate on a short-term bill that provides funding only through Friday. Republican leaders had hoped to avoid another shutdown after last fall's 43-day closure that involved around Democrats' insistence on extending federal subsidies that make health coverage more affordable for those enrolled in the Affordable Care Act marketplace. Nation and world briefly. Tehran. Iranian authorities unveiled new mural on a giant billboard Sunday in a central Tehran square with a direct warning to the United States not to attempt military strike on the country as U.S. warships head to the region. France. The captain of a tanker intercepted in the Mediterranean Sea by the French Navy on suspicion of shipping oil in violation of sanctions against Russia was being held in custody on Sunday for questioning. Iraq. Baghdad will prosecute and try militants from the Islamic State group who are being transferred from prisons and detention camps in neighboring Syria to Iraq under a U.S. brokered deal, Iraq said Sunday. D.C. Delegate Eleanor Holmes Norton, 88, the 18-term delegate for the District of Columbia in Congress and a veteran of the civil rights movement, filed paperwork to end her campaign for re-election, likely closing out a decades-long career in public service. London, a row erupted Sunday with Britain's governing Labour Party after the ambitious mayor of Manchester, Andy Burnham, was prevented from trying to re-enter Parliament at a special election in the city, with critics claiming Prime Minister Keir Starmer did not want to see a potentially dangerous rival back in the House of Commons. Brazil. Brazil's foreign ministry said Sunday it had taken over Mexico's diplomatic interests in Peru following a diplomatic rift over former Prime Minister Betsy Chavez, a Peruvian politician who was granted asylum by Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.